Welcome to Funding the Dream, the number one podcast for the number one crowdfunding platform, Kickstarter. Now here's your host, Richard Bliss.
If it wasn't for your show, I'm not sure that Comics Launch would exist at all.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, I mean, Funding the Dream was this great resource for me when I was planning my first Kickstarter launch and then trying to, you know, level up with subsequent launches.
That's the voice of Tyler James with Comic Launch and Comics Tribe. Tyler's been on the show before as a guest over the years, actually one of the very first guests I ever had, and he asked me to come and be on his show. So this episode, which is a lot longer than normal, is my appearance on his podcast, Comic Launch, and a wide range of discussions of things that we're going to talk about. So sit back, enjoy the conversation as I am a guest on Tyler's podcast.
All right, Richard from Funding the Dream. I'm really excited to have you here on Comics Launch. Welcome to the show.
Tyler, a pleasure. I'm thrilled to be here. After all these years, you finally have me as a guest on your show.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a while, and I'm excited to talk to you because this is something that probably the Comics Launch listeners don't know, but if it wasn't for your show, I'm not sure that Comics Launch would exist at all.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I mean, Funding the Dream was this great resource for me when I was planning my first Kickstarter launch and then trying to level up with subsequent launches. And, you know, you were nice enough to have me on the show a number of times. There's a couple episodes I'll include in the show notes here that we'll dive people into your backlist. But I discovered with our conversations that turns out I really like talking about comics and crowdfunding with someone that's as passionate about the medium of crowdfunding and the platforms of Kickstarter, et cetera, as me. And wouldn't you know it, a couple years later, I was doing a podcast.
Well, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because those, as you reached out to invite me on the show, those episodes with you, for me, were inspiring because, you know, at the time, crowdfunding was new. We didn't know how it was going to impact the different parts of the industry. In my case, I cover a lot of board games, but film, comics, and you kind of came on with the comic passion and helped me understand that this impact that was having in other industries was going to have or was having a similar impact. And it has stayed with me, Tyler. I have really thought about our conversations over the years because the crowdfunding really did begin to dramatically change so many different aspects. And this is one of the things I think you cover in your show.
Yeah, yeah. And so let's dive into it. I mean, first, I want to give you a big congrats. You're coming up on a milestone, episode 300.
That published, what's today? Today, it published yesterday, episode 300. Now, I did take a bit of a hiatus. I had some things that happened in life that kind of put the show on hiatus for about a year. And the fans kept emailing me, texting me, hey, when's it coming back? And now, yes, we're back. Episode 300 just hit. I have about a dozen episodes that have queued right now. And so for those fans of the show who have listened to it, we have an opportunity of continuing to be aggressive.
Yeah. And so, I mean, talk to me a little bit about it. Like, let's rewind to the beginning a little bit. Why'd you start Funding the Dream in the first place? Why a Kickstarter related show? Like what got you going? And then what has kept you going, even through some breaks and some things like that, but you're still talking about it. You're still passionate about it.
I am. I am very passionate about it. And the reason is because back in 2011, when I started, the industry that I was covering at the time was the board game space. And the reason was is because I'm in tech and I live in Silicon Valley and the technology space moves at, we all know, so fast. And so I'm used to seeing these trends. Money comes in, money goes out, things go up, things go down. And the board game industry, on the other hand, was like glacially slow. It had not changed in 30 years. But this thing called Kickstarter was starting to pop up. And at first, it was dismissed as somebody who couldn't find a legitimate way of raising money. They would go to Kickstarter and beg for it. And I recognized that there was a social economic shift in the way we talk about money and that crowdfunding was going to change the conversation in society. It wasn't – and Tyler, you've heard me say this, is that oftentimes our problem is not that we don't have any funds. Our problem is that we don't have a crowd. Can beg, borrow, and steal money. Not recommending that you do that, but you can get it. It's fairly easy, actually, in our society to get access to money. I know many listeners are going to be like, what is he talking about? But no, the hard part is finding a crowd, of reaching out and you can't borrow that. You can't beg for that. You can't steal that. That you have to organically grow. And so for me, the change of crowdfunding that allowed me to approach somebody like you, at the time, a perfect stranger, and say, would you give me $20 so that I can pursue my dream? Mm. Normally, we associate that with somebody on the side of the road with a cardboard sign that says, would you give me money so that I can eat?
Yeah.
And that this whole concept of begging and asking and giving, that crowdfunding was going to change that. And that's why I got passionate about it. And I saw it changing it in the tech, in the board game industry, film industry. And then when you came along, I recognized that it was impacting the comic industry as well.
Yeah. And that impact has only, I think, continued to grow in all of those industries. And you know, I had Jamie Stegmaier, who I know is a good friend of yours and has been a big part of the Funding the Dream podcast. I had him on my show finally late last year. And just to hear about how big the board game industry space is, but how integrated Kickstarter is with like the mega hits in that industry now.
Well, that's a very valid point. I call it the Kickstarter economy.
Yeah.
But the Kickstarter economy has now allowed people like Jamie Stegmaier to quit their day jobs and do nothing but make board games. It allows artists to quit their day jobs and be artists. It allows people to quit their day jobs and pursue their dreams. Hence, the Funding the Dream was the basis of that. But yes, you are now seeing that it's an complete integration economy that's allowing. I've had many people on my show recently that on their 10th, 11th, or 12th Kickstarter, and it's an integrated part of their business. This is what they do for a living. And I think that's what's been so transformational.
Definitely, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about a reflection on the conversations that you've had over these years with folks that we've mentioned and dozens, if not hundreds of other creators. Like, you've probably talked to more successful Kickstarter creators about their projects than most people on the planet. What are some of the things that you noticed that are commonalities between the people that really get it when it comes to crowdfunding?
Well, those who really get it recognize, well, in the early days, you know, if we talk about that, that was something somebody commented on, as I have seen it from the very beginning. You know, there were 100, we're going to use board games because that's my area, 100 successful board games funded in 2011 when I launched my podcast. And they raised $2 million. Last year, well, I don't even know how many successful last year, but there was about $150 million raised on board games alone on Kickstarter. It now dominates that category. And so I've seen this growth. What's interesting is those who are successful recognize that it's no longer the Wild West days. I can't just throw up an idea and people are going to fund it and come out of everywhere. Now, when I say, have you heard of Kickstarter? I get people looking at me like I'm an idiot. Well, duh. But it wasn't that long ago that I was asking people. I went to Gen Con and asked people. I have it on film. I walked and said, have you heard of Kickstarter? No, no, no. This was in 2012, 2013. So, you know, six years ago, people had never heard of it. And now everybody's heard of it. You know, I talked to my lawyer. Have you heard of a Kickstarter? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Of course I have. And so that's been a major change, that people recognize that you now have to put in a significant amount of work. And it's interesting because the way I've approached it is that work, and Jamie's a perfect guest on that, but that work involves a variety of things. Building the crowd first, reaching out, giving to the community. And then the key ingredient probably across all of it, and it brings us into what you're talking about, artwork. Mm-hmm. Artwork has had a huge impact on Kickstarter and crowdfunding, particularly in the space that I cover, in your space. And that's where it's been exciting to see the amount of capital infusion that allow people who are creative to have an avenue of expression. And that's probably been the biggest one. I say that on your video, your video can be authentic and organic. Although it should be informative, but it can be authentic and organic, meaning you can shoot it with your iPhone if you need to.
Yeah.
But your artwork, on the other hand, you need to pay for that. You need to go find the best artwork and the best professional you can afford to make sure that your artwork, because that's where, and I've talked to so many people who said, yeah, I backed it because of the artwork. I know that's true for me. So that's a key ingredient that I've seen the success with.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the advantages that comic book creators have, is that the one thing that we do not, in most cases, lack is cool art for our projects, because it's baked into the medium itself. And so not like, whereas I think a lot of board game designers, especially people that don't have the art background but would be, you know, design focused, that can't be an afterthought, right? Like, they need to, if they don't have those art chops, and you want to have a big successful board game, well, you got to find someone that does. And I think you're absolutely right. Kickstarter, above and beyond most things, is a visual platform. Visuals are what sell the products and sell the things that are on there and sell the concepts there. And so to the extent that you can invest in strong visuals on your page, you're going to see that return when it comes to back.
You know, and also we've got those creators who are like, well, I'm going to ask the artist to make the artwork and then I'll pay them out of my Kickstarter funds. Over the years, I know you've probably encountered that, and I know many artists have, that they're being asked to make, oh, I'll give you advertising, it'll give you exposure. Yeah. And that's not fair to the artist who has to make the work and create the work. And then if the Kickstarter project fails, they still did the work. And that's one of the things that creators need to understand, is that you need to recognize that there will be an outlay of cost associated, unless it's had a great, I had a guest just, I'm going to segue here. The other day, Thomas, I can't pronounce his last name. He's Swedish. I can do the Swedish chef from the Muppets, but I think that would be insulting to my Swedish audience. But they found an artist who was creating artwork on his blog. They made an art book in Swedish. They then did an English art book, raised $350,000, turned it into a game, turned it into some books. Now that artist has been approached by Amazon Prime, and it's being turned into a television series, very similar to Stranger Things. His artwork. So it's fascinating to see how this starts to just have a snowball effect as it has an impact over and over to so many different places. But there was somebody who found an artist and then helped promote the artist, so that artist grew and then they were able to benefit together. But if you just go to an artist and say, look, I want to take your talent and make me successful, that ain't going to cut it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that also has to do with who the team is. Because if you're someone that has never had the experience of doing the thing that you're saying you're going to do, and you're going to a professional and asking them to do something that they're known for, that they're, there's a real unequal balance. Like saying like, yeah, I'll pay you when this thing is profitable. Dude, if you've never had a profitable anything in your life, or if you've never launched a game or a comic book series or a graphic novel thing, there is literally no evidence or no likelihood that your thing will be, you know, a wild success is pretty low, unless you do some of the things that creators that treat this professionally will do, and that's hire a professional and get your professional on your team. But
absolutely,
but to sort of take all the risk essentially is what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Now I have a question for you, Tyler, because when you and I spoke and when you reached out, I told you, and when you said, "What are we going to talk about?" This is something that has stuck with me. You made a comment years ago that if Kickstarter was a comic book publisher, that they would be one of the largest in the world. Do you remember making that comment?
I do. It was actually, there was an article on Publisher, I think it was like Publishers Weekly or a similar magazine that sort of had that headline there. And so, yeah, so that was kind of, you know, a provocative way to look at the platform. And I think it's a little bit cheeky in terms of the comparison, right? Because what publishers do and what Kickstarter does is pretty different. In terms of publishers, like they're doing everything from taking this product, making the product, distributing the product, and trying to recoup through various different sales channels. Whereas Kickstarter is kind of hands off and they're the sales channel. All that being said, the market for comics, a huge part of it is in like the indie comic space. I mean, Kickstarter is the biggest platform for independent comics, I believe, in the market. I think last year was a record. Over 16 million was pledged, and over 14 million in total sales were raised for comics. So definitely a small fraction of the board game space. But you also have to recognize that the average cost of a comic versus the average cost of a board game is, you know, comparing apples and oranges there.
Yeah, we are, from a pure funding standpoint. And that's awesome to see that kind of success rate. You know, and one of my just recent guests, AJ Perferio with Van Ryder Games, his latest game is a graphic novel. And so you're starting to see, I think, that crossover as well. It's an adventure book, right? It's a graphic novel adventure book. And you're seeing that success. I think that's just great. That I, over the years, that has been one of the biggest satisfactions I've seen, is that artists who I've known, who have, you know, the proverbial struggling artists are now being recognized and rewarded financially for their contributions in a way that could never have been possible in the past. And that's one of the great things I see coming out of Kickstarter.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we see it go always too. IDW Publishing, they use Kickstarter as their board game sort of launch platform. So they'll, some of their licensed properties like Teenage Mutant Turtles and other things, as well as some of the bigger comic properties of original IP, like they will launch board games on Kickstarter, even though the direct market is still their primary channel for comics and graphic novel stuff that they put out.
So I got a question for you, because this is coming up in the board game space, and that is the glut of content that's coming because of the proliferation of projects on Kickstarter. Are you seeing that in the comic space? Are there too many comics that are being produced?
Yes. But that's sort of been an issue for years. I don't know that – I wouldn't say there's too many comics being produced on Kickstarter per se. You know, at any given time, there's between 150 and 200 comic projects on Kickstarter. And that's kind of been – last year was a record. There were more projects launched and more projects funded on in the comics category than ever before. But it's, you know, it's been a steady sort of like 17% increase. So last year was a big year, 2018. But – it's still the kind of thing where, compared to the direct market, and when I'm talking about the direct market, I'm talking about sort of local comic book shops and some comic book store retail chains. And a lot of times, like, the same shops that sell comics might also sell games and toys and other things like that.
Yep.
But those comic shops have really just one distributor, and that distributor every month puts out a mammoth, like, 400-page catalog with literally thousands of individual new SKUs. And so they chart every month like the top 300 books that come out in comics. And the bigger publishers, Marvel and DC, they're putting out, you know, anywhere from 50 to 100 titles every single month. And most comic shops do not have, you know, do not have people that are, or have a market for every book that's out there. And so it's very tough on comic book shop owners, especially because the way the direct market works is they buy comics they buy it for roughly 50% off, and they're non-returnable, unlike the bookstore's market.
Right.
And so it's very tough to see for retailers, if they buy a lot of product that doesn't move, they're stuck.
They're stuck.
Book. And so that's where there's sort of a weird thing where it's very tough, though, to get retailers to buy into Kickstarter products outside of just books that they're fans of. And the reason for that is because they're so used to terms that are a lot more favorable for them, such as 50% off. And then, you know, they can order books and then sell. They have 30 days to pay after the book shows up. So they at least have a chance to, you know, with their diamond accounts, they can come back. Whereas Kickstarter, they're paying, shelling out money up front and hoping that the thing comes out on time.
And that it's quality that they're going to write that works. I mean, there's a lot of faith in that post, in that pledge.
Exactly. And so that's why for a publisher like me that you still uses Kickstarter, but also has is in the diamond catalog, has diamond distribution, and is there, we try to get creative about playing both ends of the spectrum. And, you know, when we're doing our Kickstarter push, that's one push. And when we're doing our direct market push, that's sort of treated like a complementary but separate style of launch than just a Kickstarter launch.
You're seeing the exact same conversation happening on the board game side with a glut of board games. I call it a tsunami of board games. At any one time, there's about 300 on Kickstarter. You have thousands that are coming out every year, and board game stores simply do not have the shelf space or the inclination to risk buying multiple copies of a $50 or $100 game. Again, they get 50% off, and again, they can't return it, and now suddenly they're stuck with something that a huge cash outlay for something that they can't move. And so you're seeing the exact same issue, that distribution is full of all these SKUs, that there's so many products coming out every month, that they're starting to turn more and more to the tried and true, the evergreen content, right? In your case, I guess it would just be your traditional, hey, we're going to carry what we know sells, and then we might experiment a little bit with a few out here. And then the Kickstarter love-hate relationship with Kickstarter. You're seeing the exact same reflection in the industry. And my question then is that, on Kickstarter, are you finding an audience who is starting to say, look, this is where I'm going to go to find my comics. And it almost becomes its own distribution, own channel of consumption, that I'm not going to go into a comic book store. I'm just going to continue to use it through Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are absolutely people that do the dominant amount of their purchasing on Kickstarter. And that's where they get most of their books. That's where they support most of their books. I don't know if this is the case, and you can tell me in the board game space, but I assume it's probably similar in that a fair percentage of people that launch projects on Kickstarter and comic space also do support other projects on Kickstarter from other, you know, other comic creators. And so that is kind of a thing where a lot of, I know a lot of creators that I know, the bulk of the comics that they buy, they're actually supporting more comics on Kickstarter than they necessarily are like going at local comic shops or whatever. But, you know, but I've also found that like fans have their preferred means of their preferred channel. For some, it's digital comics and they get most of their comics from Comixology. For some, it's conventions. They go to 3 or 4 conventions each year, and that's where they're spending the bulk of their budgets on, you know, either convention exclusive stuff or tracking bargain hunting for deals or hitting up Artist Alley. For some, they have a great local comic book shop. And unfortunately, you know, there are about, I think, two anywhere between like 1,800 and 2,200 of these local comic shops around the world, right? And that means necessarily that there are some places, like if you're in New York or the Massachusetts where I am, like you have sort of a cornucopia of great local comic shops. But there are other people that don't have a good comic shop within hours and hours and hours of them. And then internationally as well, the comic book shops are few and far between, you know, outside of the US and a few pockets of the UK and Australia. And so for those people, Kickstarter can be a godsend, and they may find that they're doing the bulk of their shopping there.
Do you think that Kickstarter has brought in a new audience of comic book consumers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if one of the common things at the end of every year, there's always like in the comics blogs and the comics media space, one of the questions that gets asked every single year is, what do you want to see more of comics in 20, whatever the next year is? And the answer is always diversity. I want to see more diversity. I want to see new creators and new ideas and different viewpoints and everything like that. And by and large, if you flip through your diamond catalog, right, from the established big name publishers, some are good at that. But most of the stuff looks like most of the stuff. You know, like superheroes still dominate the traditional market because Marvel and DC are the biggest games and are the biggest publishers out there, and they put out most of the books. 80-90% market share is Marvel and DC, and 80-90% of what they do is superhero books. And so the direct market itself looks, you know, like, while yes, you can, there are deep cuts and you can find just about anything in a comic shop, it does get skewed that way. But if you go on Kickstarter, you're going to find that there is so much representation and so much on there that leans, like you can't really say what the genre is that is, you know, is dominant on Kickstarter, because there is none. Now, yes, some projects tend to do better than others, especially if they can tie into things that people like and keywords that people are searching for anyway, such as like horror, sci-fi, or Cthulhu, right? But
Cthulhu on the board game space too. Cthulhu,
it's everywhere,
right? I just slap Cthulhu on the front and it's going to sell.
Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where you've got a lot of underrepresented, and that's also a part of Kickstarter's ethos, right? Like if you listen to what Kickstarter puts out, from the content that they produce, from the stories they celebrate, they tend to skew towards wanting diversity as one of their core values. And so it's reflected in the projects that they love, the projects they promote, the projects that they give extra coverage to. And so yeah, I think that has made a thing. I'm curious, are there any sort of new strategies or tactics or things that you've been seeing emerge over the last couple of years that maybe you didn't see early on or things that are just working that more creators should be aware of or consider when planning?
Yeah, there's one thing that creators should be aware of, and it's just been a recent thing. Jamie wrote in a blog about it just this week, Jamie Stegmaier, and it had to do with the concept that if you don't fund within the first 48 hours, there's a really good chance you're not going to fund. And this is not something that used to occur in the past when Kickstarter first started out, and even in the early, not the necessarily the early times, you had this trough. I called it the Golden Gate Bridge approach. You'd have this huge spike in the beginning, this decline through the middle, and then there'd be a gradual climb, and then you'd have a spike at the end. And then your funding came mostly from those first two, that front end and that back end. Yeah. But that back end has really trailed off, partly because of this, the sheer amount of content. By the time your project gets to the end of it, let's say it's 30 days. Yeah. By the time your project gets to the end of 30 days in the board game space, there have been at least 300 new projects launched between your beginning and your end. And that means that there's at least 300 other projects that are demanding the attention and the dollars and the money from the fans. So it's now boiled down to you've got 48 hours. You've got 48 hours to find the money to fund your project, whether it's $10,000, $50,000, or $100,000, whatever it might be. Hmm. And that's where, and that's been, I think, a dramatic change, which then changes the way you approach your Kickstarter campaign. And that is, you need to have done your homework. You have had to build your crowd, have a name, have a product that's been reviewed, have it talked about, have a build-up campaign of anticipation. It really has become this mini launch that, okay, I'm going to do this Kickstarter, and then recognize that just saying the word Kickstarter no longer works. It actually becomes a backlash that people are sick and tired of their Facebook groups or their LinkedIn groups or their Twitter feeds being flooded with, hey, I'm launching my Kickstarter. Yeah, okay, yeah, we got that. Everybody's got that. And instead, what you have to do is say, okay, here's my Kickstarter. What audience does this resonate with? Go find that audience, build a community of support, and then have that be able to rely on that audience. And it's not just, well, I've got 100 people on my Facebook page, so they all liked it.
Yeah.
No, you've got to find a way to actually confirm, build an email list, build content. And this has been a very big change, is that the window of opportunity for you to succeed is now very small. And 48 hours seems to be it. If you can't do it in 48 hours, we used to say if you couldn't fund 30% in 24 hours that you were in trouble. Yep. Now it's 100% in 48 hours or else you're in trouble. Yeah. And that's something for your creators to sit back and go, crap, what am I going to do?
So here's my question for you. Yeah. Is like, is the attitude that that creators coming to Kickstarter in the board game space, are they coming and feeling like they're battling for the Kickstarter board game backers? Because like I've had some creators, because one of the things that I sort of teach and important is I encourage creators to think of Kickstarter less like your source of backers and more simply as your venue for your party. And you are 100% in charge of the guest list. Now, the nice thing about Kickstarter is if your party is hopping and the doors are open, you're going to attract more people to it. But you can't look to Kickstarter simply as we got to go get those Kickstarter backers, because at least in the comics like space, like I don't think there are backers that are just out there. I'm just floating here and waiting for, and I have my, here's my $100 that I spend every month on Kickstarter. Ooh, what am I going to spend it on? No.
There's a lot of those people in the board game space.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. I'm also wondering, you said you're seeing the big spikes at the beginning and that being super, super necessary. Are you seeing projects also limit their time that they're spending, like the launches down from 30? The case of the spike? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing more and more as it's creeping down that people are saying, look, I'm not going to pick up any backers, significant amount of money if I keep this thing running. Mm. The energy, the excitement, because there's so many other things than demanding. Yeah, yours was exciting for those 48 hours that you launched, but now I've moved on to other, my attention has moved on.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing backers saying, creators saying, why am I putting this out here for 30 days? I can remember early on, it used to be 45 days that people would put. And then it came down to 30. And now it's starting to creep down into, I think I was talking to Michael Mendez on one of my shows just recently with John Covey. I think his is 17 days. I know Jamie Stegmaier with his oftentimes does, when he used to do Kickstarters, they were a much shorter attention because you need to make sure that energy stays high, it stays focused, and then it's in and you're out. And you give a sense of urgency to your backers if they know they only have a limited amount of time. They're going to see it and they're going to back it knowing that, hey, I can't just like follow it for a while and then I'll come back to it. No, you come back to it, you're going to miss it.
Right.
But that also brings up another point, Tyler, and that is another major development that I don't know if it's in the comic book space, but it is in the board game space, and that is the pledge manager. That is the company that you have chosen to fulfill your Kickstarters after the campaign. Yeah. And these pledge managers oftentimes can drive 50% more revenue from your Kickstarter. So if you raise $100,000 on your Kickstarter, the pledge manager can drive another $50,000 of revenue after the Kickstarter, right afterwards, because of the way that they do this management, add-ons, that type of thing. So I don't know if that's in the pledge managers are not specific to board games, but I don't know if the comic books have taken advantage of that fully.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit different just simply because comics projects, 75% of comics projects raise less than $10,000. And so that's different than the board games. And they also, and the vast majority of comics projects also get less than like 200 backers, which is, honestly, I think that's an awesome thing. It shows the long tail effect, and it shows that
it does
have a massive audience to get your comic out, you know, printed and out into the world. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I do know that a lot of these pledge managers, BackerKit, Crowdox, they do really, you need a certain number of backers and an add-on strategy in order to make them work. Now for me and our projects, you know, we almost always have far more than that in terms of backers for our projects. And now that we've been around for a while, we do have an extensive backlist. So yeah, like those are something that I'll use that for most campaigns so that we can sell more after the fact. And you are absolutely right. Like the add-ons at the survey is like the easiest funding you'll raise during the entire convention.
Right. It's people who missed it and they're like, oh, I still want to get it. And then there's that sense of urgency. So to answer your question, yes, time has been restricted. You've only got 48 hours and then you've got a very sharp drop off. So prolonging it, again, this is in one space. It might not be applicable in the other. And then this being able to take advantage and say, okay, how am I going to continue to build this fan base? And being able to turn back around and continue to, as I call it, feed the beast. Tyler, you've been able to successfully do that. But once you have a fan base and once they are aware of who you are, and I got this from you and I were talking earlier, one of my guests on my show, Seth Godin, a marketing guy. I was at a conference once and a Q&A happened and somebody asked him, and I'm sitting in the back, and somebody said, how do I find more customers for my products? I got this new product. How do I find more customers? And Seth said, you've got it backwards. It's not how do you find more customers for your products. How do you find more products for your customers? And that's that essence of where my crowdfunding, you don't have a funding problem, you have a crowd problem. Once you have a crowd and once you've successfully launched one project, you now have a fan base. Do not pass up the opportunity to continue to feed that fan base. Partner with somebody else, do something, but keep that fan base going. And then slowly over time, that will start to expand as the beast continues to want to be fed. And that's something not to overlook as well.
Yeah, so that's something, I mean, we see that in comics. I think comics are good for that and related to crowdfunding in that most comics are serialized in nature. So it's like you've launched this, we've got another issue, another volume, et cetera, or a spinoff series, et cetera. And I know in the board game space, expansion packs and extra tokens or extra upgrade this or that, that's all very successful. And I think, but I think sort of as you said, there can be a glut. And so if you're not only have these many, like all these projects launching, but then expansion packs for all of those projects. But at the same point, as long as the audience is still buying, I guess that's the name of the game, right?
It is. It is.
So I'm not sure if you saw the announcement, Kickstarter is shutting down Kickstarter Live. That's something that they're no longer going to be supporting. Did that ever take off in the board game space? And any thoughts on that?
You know, my thoughts on that are because of the space, the work that I do outside of Kickstarter, and that is I spend my life in the tech industry. I own a consulting practice working with tech companies and executives, helping them master the language of social media and building up a public persona. That's what I do. And so this concept of live, live on LinkedIn, live on Facebook, live on Kickstarter, you know, it really caught on because everybody's like, oh, you know, video is the way to go. So this isn't quite answering your question, but for example, on LinkedIn, where I know you're not active and I need to beat you up on that, Tyler, is that text posts increase your engagement on LinkedIn dramatically over any kind of video post or sharing a story. Text, just pure text, is that people oftentimes want to engage. So Kickstarter Live meant that somebody had to be sitting there, have the time and pay attention. I don't know about you, but I seldom have the attention span to sit down and watch somebody riff live through some kind of project that I probably could just capture later on. Yeah. And so, no, I'm not surprised that they've killed it.
It's a weird thing for me because I'm sort of the same way. Like tuning in live and sitting there live is one thing. And yet on the other hand, when I look at Twitch and I look at some of the creators who are building these massive followings for their YouTube live streams – and just doing bonkers stuff over there. And it's literally, they're not even streaming like a video. Like it's just like, here's an image of my head as I riff throughout my day and stream for 3 hours. And yet they're getting hundreds and thousands of people tuning in. It is a little bizarre, but you know what? I guess it just shows that there's a lot of different ways to reach an audience.
There is. And I think in that case, you have an audience going with the expectation, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
I don't go to Kickstarter to watch something live. I don't go to LinkedIn to watch something live. But I would go to if I was going to watch something live, I'd probably go to YouTube to watch it because that's where I go to watch things. Hmm. And I think it's just I'm not surprised. It's not having any impact. I'm not aware of anybody who successfully used it in the space on Kickstarter.
Interesting. Awesome. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I know you have a question, but that does bring up an interesting comment because I have a guest coming on, Luke Gygax, who is the son of the creator of Dungeons & Dragons, Gary Gygax. Luke is a friend of mine. He's going to be on the show, and we're going to talk about the live watching of Dungeons & Dragons games. Hmm. He has done a couple of live streams of D&D games. I have another guest coming on, Jason Massey, who does Dungeons & Randomness, which is a Patreon where he does a podcast, makes a living. He quit his job, and this is what he does for a living. He does a podcast playing a D&D game with friends. So there's this side of it, this aspect of tuning in, this voyeurism of watching other people playing games. And we've seen it on the video side of video games, but we're starting to see it in the board game side as well. So that is a fascinating aspect of it.
So going, I guess tease us going ahead, you're 300 episodes deep. What are some of the topics, challenges, or angles related to Kickstarter crowdfunding that you're hoping to tackle or people hoping to interview over your next 300 shows?
Well, and that brings up a good thing. I love doing this. And if I could do this full time, that's what I would do. I have met, as you already identified, fascinating people over the years, and I have been able to watch this impact in society that crowdfunding has had. I'd like to continue to be able to interview people who are having an impact that are transforming and changing the way we think about things. I'm always looking for that angle. And so I've gotten excited. The challenge is, Tyler, I've got so much content that I want to come out. My goal is that this becomes a daily show, that the Funding the Dream, which is 20 minutes, becomes a daily show. And the Daily Show, Jon Stewart's The Daily Show, has been part of that inspiration. I sat down when I got ready to do my podcast, I took a stopwatch and timed how much time did Jon Stewart actually talk on The Daily Show in that 30-minute segment? And it was less than 20 minutes. It was about 18 minutes. And I thought, if he can get a monologue, a skit, and a guest all within 18 to 20 minutes, I could do that in 20 minutes. And then if he's doing it on a daily basis, that's one of my goals, is that the show comes out on a daily basis so that I can review people who are doing interesting things live, that I can keep people informed on the industry, that I can bring in creators who are transforming and having an impact. That's what I'm looking for where the Funding the Dream is going. Because at first I thought as I came back that I didn't have anything to contribute to the industry. But now I recognize that, no, there's so much out there that having an established voice that's been there since the beginning continues to be something that's needed.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I think it's Stuart's a great example. One thing that he would be the first to tell you is that he also had an awesome team behind him of producers and people that were keeping the thing so that he could literally show up with his makeup done and his talk, do his thing.
Hey, that's my dream. I'll show up and then my team.
Yeah, Funding the Dream team is
Funding the Dream. There's a couple of members now of Funding the Dream team. Brian Rosender and William Umstadt have been both volunteers on the back end who are starting to help make the show possible as we continue to grow. So, yeah, I'm having some success as people have stepped up and helped out.
That's awesome to hear. Well, we're actually going to flip the script, and I'm going to jump on your show, and you're going to record me in a minute. And so I'll make sure that when that episode goes live, we'll share that with my audience as well. But is there anything before we do that you want to share with the Comics Launch listeners before we go?
You know, I'm thinking that maybe we just take this episode and put it on my show, that we just do a crosscast. This has been a great conversation that we've had. I'm excited to see your success and how things have progressed. And there's probably some questions I'll ask you. So we'll do that. But no, I'm just that the impact of creative people who have something to say and something to show, and the opportunity that Kickstarter and crowdfunding has allowed that to happen, is something that continues to inspire me. And so I've created a podcast. That's my creative outlet. Other people, though, your fans and people who you're involved with, are using that as a visual medium to create their own visions of the world around us. And I think that in some ways we have just become so much enriched because we now have found a way to reward each other for pursuing our passions and our dreams. And so I've been very excited about that.
Yeah, that is one of the special things about the time we're living in. So it's not all doom and gloom. There are some great things out there, and I think Kickstarter crowdfunding is one of them. Well, thanks so much for taking your time today, Richard, and sharing your insights with the Comics Launch audience. And I know a lot of them are going to be diving deep into your archive, because you've talked to some amazing creators.
I have.
Past several years, and I know a lot more good is coming on Funding the Dream. So thank you so much for your time.
Tyler, the pleasure's been mine. Thanks.
That's been Tyler and I having a wide-ranging conversation about a variety of topics. Hopefully you enjoyed it. It was a double episode. 20 minutes is normally the length. That was easily 40 minutes long. And thank you for those on Patreon who are backing my podcast so that makes it possible from a financial standpoint to make it successful as we do this. And thanks for those leaving reviews. And if you'd like to have a conversation with us, join us on Facebook, Funding the Dream on Kickstarter podcast Facebook group. It's always a mouthful. Hey, thanks for listening. Take care.